Right, Richie there? You're mute, Rich.
I said I certainly am, but you're right, I was on mute. That is an excellent start to proceedings.
There you go. I said, a man of your age trying to get to grips with Twitter Spaces, even though it's not the first time we've done it.
Do you know what?
I'm glad we got there.
I thought that was really seamless when I sort of came in on what you said, and then when you said, can you hear me, I realised that, yeah, it hadn't really worked out quite the way I'd planned.
Yeah, there we go. Well, you're here now, and that's all that counts.
Exactly, yeah.
Unlike last night's game, where you decided to stay at home and watch it on the telly.
I did. I can't believe you're trying to shame me on this, Lou. Let me just make it very, very clear. I am watching the Palace game tonight. I cannot be there. And I am watching the Millwall game because of the stress and perils of deadline at the South London Press. Three games on successive nights is not great. So that was the reason why, and I had a few vehicle issues. But you're putting me on the defensive literally straight away on this, which is outrageous.
Yeah, it's normally away games that you struggle to get to, but now you're starting to find excuses for home games. I'm getting a bit worried. But right, it looks like everyone's starting to join us now. So welcome everybody. So this is our second ever SLP Verdict. And tonight it's myself, Louis Mendez, the SLP Charlton reporter, and our sports editor, Richard Corley, looking back at Charlton's 3-0 win over Portsmouth at the Valley last night. Charlton's first consecutive league wins of the season as well. And leaves them, was it 2 points outside of playoffs? Are we getting excited about that just yet, Rich?
Well, this is a big question, you see. And is it too early to say? I mean, I think Reese has said on the mentions, are we getting playoffs this season? And why is the answer yes? So
I've got lots of reasons why the answer could still be no.
Okay.
With some of my Excel wizardry doing some of the maths. But maybe we'll come on to that slightly later, actually, because I don't want to ruin the fun.
Peak too early, Lou. You know that.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I just don't want to dampen everyone's high spirits, because I mean it was a good performance last night from Charlton. I thought it took them maybe 15 minutes to start, but you know, when it went into the lead, that goal from Ryan Innes. We'll talk about the catalyst to this set piece brilliance that Charlton have. Have discovered. We'll talk about that in a few moments. So, second one from Blackett Taylor. Got to speak about him because he was excellent last night. And then shortly after that, red card for Marlon Pack. Owen O'Connell got his first Charlton goal again from a free kick, again from a Fraser delivery. So it's only a second loss of the season for Portsmouth. And as we said, it's consecutive wins for the Addicts now. Who I'm hoping, based on last night's performance, Rich, that they've started to turn a corner. And just before we go into that, obviously you guys are more than welcome to send us some questions in as well. So if you tweet either me or Rich, we'll pick it up. We've got a few questions lined up already. But yeah, I mean, my opening question to you then, Rich, is does it feel like Charlton have turned a corner now, a couple of wins in a row?
Well, I think you've got to think that it looks that way, doesn't it? Because, I mean, sort of seven goals in the last two home games, but that's the caveat, it is the home games. And obviously they're going to need to improve their away record to actually kind of muscle their way, I think, properly into that top six. But I thought last night, I thought there were lots of positives. I thought the shape looked really good. I thought they pressed really well out of possession. And they had that dynamism with the ball as well when they, you know, I mean, I know the first goal was a set piece, an overdue goal from a set piece, although albeit short corner routine. But I do think as well that the likes of Corey Blackett-Taylor, when he's in the mood, it just underlines again that Charlton have got some really talented players. And when it clicks well, doesn't it? I mean, you go back to the Plymouth game earlier in the season. Plymouth went down to 10, but even before that, Charlton were very fluid on the ball. And it just worked really well for them last night. I thought it was really comfortable. I thought Portsmouth could. I mean, Danny Cowley tried to make as many changes as he possibly could, didn't he, to try and affect the game. But once it went sort of 2-0, I don't think. I know some people would say you need a third to feel really secure, but it never felt like there was ever any danger of the lead being relinquished. Not to me anyway. Even before Pat got sent off and O'Connell got that third goal.
Yeah, Jojo Wallacott and the Addicts goal didn't really have too many saves to make. I mean, there was that header in the first half still at 0-0, which was a decent stop to tip it over the bar. But yeah, other than that, I agree that they felt comfortable. And there was, of course, the concern going into that game with Miles Lieber now injured for Well, Ben said medium term, but you're looking at over a month, I think, realistically, with those ankle ligaments. There was some Charlton fans questioning whether they'd still be able to stick in that 4-4-2 shape, which I think that shape has brought about that improvement. Even at Lincoln, in what wasn't a spectacular performance, but you could tell that Charlton had a bit more control in that game. And you know, Miles Leeburn, I think, had just really grown into that position as well. So with him out, I was a bit concerned as to whether Ben would feel like he had to either shoehorn someone into the 4-4-2 or come away from it again. And he went for, and I don't want to, it's the wrong phrase, shoehorn, but you know, we haven't seen Charlie Kirk play up top before. It was the first time he has. And I think he suited that role quite well. Ben Garner was certainly very, very positive about his performance at full time.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, I mean, it was a lovely weighted pass, wasn't it, to put Blackett Taylor in. And you know you're going to get that kind of quality from Charlie. Obviously, quite often it's out wide, but this time it was more central. I mean, he's got the intelligence to be able to affect games in any of the forward areas on the pitch, you would say. But I think the player that seemed to me to really kind of help gel everything together in an attacking sense was obviously Blackett Taylor. I mean, if you'd come along to that game without knowing anything about the teams and were told there's a highly rated attacker that's from a Premier League club that's out on that pitch, it wouldn't have been Jez Rucksacker you would have thought about on that occasion. It would have been Blackett Taylor, because I thought last night, again, it probably underlines why he can be frustrating, because when it all comes together, he's a real powerhouse, particularly at League One level.
Yeah, he certainly is. Let's talk about the opening goal then. So it was a question that we asked Ben Garner a couple of weeks ago. Charlton's expected goals, XG, from set pieces have been particularly disappointed. And I couldn't remember too many chances they'd even had from corners over the course of the season. And again, a half-decent one showed up at Lincoln when Innes peeled away to the far post and actually headed it back across. But we just felt over the last couple of games they were getting into a space where perhaps they would start to threaten from set pieces. I mean, you can't miss Ryan Innes. He's so tall at the far post. All you have to do is put it into an area and hope he can attack it. And that's what worked for Charlton last night. But, I mean, I'm absolutely obsessed by what Ben Garner told us has been so down at Sparrows Lane this week, he told us they've gone out and spent £40 on a massive extension cable so they can bring a TV out to the side of the pitch so they can analyse their set pieces properly. I mean, it's a simple solution, but it's worked wonders.
It's really funny because I think someone had sent a picture of an extension lead and saying, oh, this is, you know, money well spent, and Thomas Sandgaard shelling out for some extra sort of kit and stuff. But I mean, I think in defence of things, obviously, you know, Premier League clubs have got huge amounts of money they can throw at it, and I'm sure that there's probably countless teams that don't have the ability to maybe do the set piece stuff the way they want to lower down the leagues. And I think, you know, it probably is just a bit of a pat on the back where they found a way around it, but it does sound. It's a lovely image, isn't it? Them kind of. I've got this image of a TV on wheels. You know, they used to have the video recorders when when I was at school, a long time ago.
Overhead projectors where you slide the see-through paper onto it.
Yeah, it's just funny when you think about it. But it worked. I mean, the thing with Innes is we know that he was quite often the play, wasn't he? Since he's been at the club, a lot of the time the corners would quite often go to the back post, or they would be there for Ryan Innes to try and attack. And you saw exactly why last night. You know, Michael Morrison, everyone will remember him at Charlton, a very, very good defender, but he got absolutely bullied on that ball that came in. And if Ryan Innes gets... I mean, A, it's difficult to stop him, I would think, and muscle him out of making his run, but he's just so good in the air that he's got to be chipping in with a lot, you know, a decent amount of goals this season. And I think I'm right in saying, is that his first since February?
Yeah, it's a long time. It's a long time coming. And like I said, I feel like he should have had one away at Lincoln when instead he tried to go across. But the deliveries, we aren't finished with the extension cord this week, by the way. We've got some exclusive Scott Fraser action talking about the extension cord coming up later on in the week. But it was his two deliveries, his first two assists of the season, he was telling us last night. That made those goals as well, because they were great balls in. And again, that is probably something Charlton have lacked so far this season, and that's why their return from set pieces hasn't been anywhere near what they'd need. And that does play a big part. You know, a lot of teams rely on set pieces, and I think people would refer to them as like bonus goals, and that's something that Cheltenham have lacked this season. And again, that could be another thing that could have turned some of those draws into wins.
Yeah, I think Scott Fraser and Dobson as a midfield two is interesting, isn't it? Because again, there's some quotes from later in the week about that Scott sort of mentions that he hasn't really played that role before in his career, and it worked really well. I mean, I think the thing that he did well was he made. I think I was looking at who scored, and it mentions tackles attempted, which I'm assuming is actual tackles made because he seemed to break up a lot of play. I think it was his interception that led to the Blackett Taylor goal that obviously Kirk then fed into him. But 9 tackles attempted, most in the game, I think. And then you've got George Dobson, as you'd expect, either tackles or he's actually 5 interceptions. That was the highest in the game as well. So between the two of them, they were very, very good defensively. But on top of that, Fraser added that bit of grit you needed in that role and obviously the quality that he's got. And like you say, both balls in are exactly the kind of headers that a centre-back wants to get. And O'Connell took his very well as well. So it's interesting that the two has worked in there. The thing that worries me, maybe looking forward a bit, is the fixtures come sort of hot and heavy now, don't they, really, for Charlton? And you've got the FA Cup game, you've got the League Cup game, you've got the EFL trophy. But I think I might be wrong, but I worked it out. I think it's 8 games in the next 4 weeks. And the one concern a little bit is what happens when these players start to really train together the matches and the minutes, because is there going to be the depth there? You've already mentioned Miles Lieber not available, which is a big blow because he's been doing terrifically well in his first season at this level. So that's maybe a little bit of a concern. I don't know what you would say on the depth side looking ahead to those matches.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised you've been looking up the fixtures because I know you struggle to get out of the house these days, so you're probably concerned that there's so many to go to between now and then. But I mean, the depth is the big question. I mean, I've been putting off talking about the stats now for the playoffs, but I'll go.
I ran
the numbers a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? When we worked out that roughly Charlton over the last 5 years, sixth place in League One was 74.8 points, so around 74, 75, And just based on the teams that are currently sitting around 6th and 7th, I've worked out, so there's Barnsley, Bolton, Shrewsbury, who've all got 21 points from 13 games. So they're going to hit on average about 74.3. But then you've got Derby down in 7th, who've only played 12 games, but they've got 20 points. So actually, on average, they're going to hit about 76.6. So I think, realistically, as it stands, we're still expecting that 74, 75, 76 mark to be roughly what Charlton have required. So when I worked this out after the Lincoln game, they would have needed sort of 1.82 points per game for the rest of the season. Now, these 2 wins in the last 2 games has actually brought that level down to 1.74 points now for the rest of the season. So I worked out how many teams achieved that in the final 32 games of last season. So whereas when Charlton needed to get the 1.82, there was only 4 teams that did it in 34. And there's now 6 teams that did that in the final 32 games. So you can add 2 teams that made a dart into the playoffs in Portsmouth and Sunderland last season. So still 2 of the top teams with the top squads in that division. So because of Charlton's start, and I know it looks quite good at the moment with just 2 points outside the playoffs, we have to bear in mind that every team between... was it Peterborough in 4th? So they've played 14, but everyone below them and above Charlton, so Portsmouth down to Derby, have got at least 1 game in hand. So let's just assume that 2-point gap's probably going to grow to 4 or 5 naturally. That sort of gives you an idea of where they are. And also that points per game that they need now for the rest of the season, so the 1.74 over the 32 games left, that still doesn't give you much room for manoeuvre. So Charlton's current points per game this season is 1.36. So, I mean, they certainly couldn't afford to go another 8 games without a win. And I'd suggest that their start to the season means they've got very little in the way of wriggle room now between the end of the season and where we are now. So it's still a big ask, and then it does come back to the squad. You know, when we were on last time having this conversation, Rich, I remember someone on Twitter called Noddy tweeted us asking if we thought we were relegation fodder. And I said, no way, Charlton have got enough in them to win games. And I'm confident that, probably similar to last season under Jacko, they've got enough in them to have some good spells. And I think they'll get on little runs where they'll win 4 out of 6 and things like this. But I think the problem is, as soon as those injuries hit in what is still looking like quite a small squad, I think they'll have those wobbles again that will mean that it'll be too much. That's where I'm seeing it now. I don't know if you have a different view on that, Rich.
Well, after all that information that you got there, which is absolutely to be commended, I think it sounds a piece of cake for them. I don't know why you're making a fuss about it, Lee. No, there were some good stats. I mean, I think the same. I think, you know, obviously, the thing is, you look at the table and it doesn't look, you don't, I mean, without crunching the numbers, which you've obviously taken the time to do, I look at it and I'm thinking, you know, just outside the playoffs, yeah, they played a game more. There's some teams that got games in hand, but no guarantees they pick up points. And I think it's absolutely right that you look at the, you know, what averages out to get like an idea of what's needed. I mean, we know from the start, you know, one of the worst starts that the club has made at this level, they're going to have work to do. But we also know that back-to-back wins does kind of spark a major change in the situation. So I do go back to what I said at the start, which you then talked about, is whether the squad depth is there. Of course, the question is, if Charlton get to January and they're in a pretty good position, what happens then? Is there going to be more spent on the team? What's going to be the kind of investment? Because, you know, Ben Garner's made it pretty clear that the squad, when he inherited it, wasn't in the shape and sort of didn't have the players to play the system he wanted. Even at the end of the window, he said that we didn't get enough business done. But I don't think necessarily that's all meant as a criticism, because, of course, building a squad is a process, and any manager would probably say they need two or three windows to shape their squad. So, but I do think if they're in sort of striking distance of the playoffs, or they're even better than that come January, it does give the ownership a decision to make on what they do. And I've got to be honest, I've not had that conversation with anyone to ask what that situation will be. Not at this stage in October anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Ian's asked the question then, will the club actually have a budget for the January window? I mean, Thomas Sangard has made it clear that his aim this season is to cut costs, to break even. So that doesn't really go hand in hand with spending money in January when Charlton haven't spent money on transfer fees in the summer window. So the suggestion would be, you'd think not. I mean, whether that, you'd assume that would turn out. I mean, he seems pretty intent on the cutting costs at the moment. You know, I know he splashed out 40 quid on the extension cord, but it does pose an interesting question, as you say, that if Charlton do have a real good spell between now and then, which obviously it has to happen before we can say either way it will, but it will give him a decision to make, because I think we know that central income in League One, running the club, shrinking its finances in League One, it doesn't seem like a sustainable way to run the club, and you're probably better off in the Championship, at least because you'll see a bit more central income coming in.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well on the transfer situation in the January window is if you look at the summer, the signings were predominantly frees, weren't they? So you're not going to be in that situation in the January window that there's, well, I mean, there will be unattached players, but they probably won't have played for however many months, and I just don't think they're particularly viable. The one area that is obviously viable is going more into the loan market. Now, I think there's probably pros and cons with that. You know, they're not your player. I guess from a manager's perspective, you always want players that are yours. I think supporters want to see players that are there for the longer term and part of it. But, I mean, that is another way of perhaps doing it in the short term without, you know, escalating your costs quite so much. And obviously there's question marks. I mean, you know, if Miles Leeburn had stayed fit and had carried on scoring, and, you know, he could come back fairly soon, and it still might be a question for January as to whether the club get any kind of interest in him. Obviously, with Jez Rakczaki, we don't know exactly what Crystal Palace's thoughts would be in January, so that could be another thing that could be a factor. Although, I think with Rakczaki, I was looking at it at the last night, 10 losses of possession, the most in the match. But, I mean, I would say, on top of that, it's clear that his position in the team is to take those risks, not necessarily just to play the safe pass. He's there to kind of try and make some magic happen.
At least three of those losses of possession were in the Portsmouth 6-yard box, weren't they? Where, again, his decision-making could have been better. But I still think he's a danger.
Absolutely.
He's not being as potent perhaps as when he first started, but he's still a risk. I mean, Dan's asking about Scott Fraser saying, is this the same one that tormented Charlton with Milton Keynes? I mean, he said himself when I spoke to him, and again, we'll have those quotes later on in the week on the SLP website about how difficult last season was for him with injuries and COVID, and now I think we're seeing the real Scott Fraser, which is good. I mean, another question that's come through from Callum says, how important have Egbo and Sessegnon been since coming back from their injuries? Because I mean, I've highlighted last night on Twitter that I thought our centre halves have looked better. Owen O'Connell is a player who at times this season is giving me a bit of a fright, but I think he's looked a lot more assured over the last three games or so. And some are saying, well, do you think the fact that we do have these two fullbacks now has played a big part in that? Do you think that could have an influence on how the defence plays as a whole?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, I don't, as you've already made the point a couple of times, I say point, I'd probably also call it a dig, that I don't get to see every single game and I don't go to the away matches, but I see a fair bit of it. And the games I've seen since Mandela Legbo's come back, I think as he's got fitter, definitely he looks, I think he was very, very solid again last night. I think Stephen Sessegnon was exactly the same down the other side. So you've got that natural bounce, haven't you, with sort of fullbacks playing in them. I say their natural position. Stephen Sessegnon can obviously play both sides. I 100% think it's helped. I mean, I think as well that there's been a bit of continuity, hasn't there, which I think Ben said last night in the defence as well. You know, it's been fairly settled. At the moment, it is O'Connell and Innes in the centre. The two fullbacks look fairly nailed on, although, again, you just wonder with the game fixtures coming up, you know, I'm pretty sure Sean Clare will get some top game minutes and there'll be some switches here and there. I mean, Ryan Innes is another that has had his injury issues. So whether he can just keep playing at centre-back through all these fixtures remains to be seen. But yeah, I think it's definitely helped. And I just think the fact that Ben seems to have settled on what he thinks is probably his strongest back four, back five, obviously with the goalkeeper. But I mean, Wallacott was kind of nailed on, wasn't he, really, from pre-season.
Yeah, certainly. So Lewis says set pieces were brilliant last night, something we've struggled with previously, considering the physical presence of Jaden, Ryan and Owen has been a massive frustration. Looked much better last night, looked like scoring from every corner. So that's all coming back to the extension cord. Rick says there seems to be more emphasis on getting the ball forward out of the danger zone. Did this come across live at the match? I mean, certainly, we spoke about that pace of Corey Blackett-Taylor. Charlton seemed to really hit Portsmouth quick on the turnover of possession.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think the pressing was great. I think even on the commentary, because I was watching on Sky, Lou, as you've mentioned, they actually mentioned on that the you know, Charlton's shape, the way that they engaged Portsmouth was really, really good. And I don't know who was on co-coms, I can't remember, but they said about how the shape and the tactics have been set up really well. I just think it worked. I mean, Portsmouth, it seems like they're a bit more of a direct side. But, I mean, they've got a wealth of good players. And they didn't really, when you look at it as an attacking force, they just weren't able to execute any of it. And that's down to Charlton playing well and keeping their shape. And they definitely did. They seemed to know. There was a few times when Portsmouth got into your half and Charlton didn't necessarily step out. They just kept their shape a bit deeper. They were leading at the time, but it was obviously very, very clearly implemented, and I thought it worked great.
Yeah, certainly. Simon says, how long did it take the covered end to come up with the revised lyrics for the Pompey Chimes? Yeah, so it's one they've used. It's one they've used over the years. I enjoyed the fact that the covered end was singing "We Always Win at Fratton Park" last night. I don't think they noticed where they were, really, at the Valley. I thought. It is worth saying, I thought the atmosphere was brilliant last night, considering.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because obviously there's been a bit of talk about the attendances, and I think even last night, I mean, you tell me, it didn't sound like, it was, a little bit up, wasn't it, on some of the recent ones, but in the home areas, but it sounded good.
Yeah, no, yeah, the numbers are still low, and I think there is still a discussion to be had, of course, about why that is. But yeah, the ones who were there, there's I've got no qualms with people who don't go for whatever reason they don't want to go. But yeah, the ones who were there certainly made a lot of noise last night and certainly enjoyed it. And I think they have been good throughout the course of the season. And I think they have tended to stick with Garner and the side. He took a bit of verbal away at Lincoln after the eighth game without a win. But they've tended to to back him. But obviously, you know, it is a problem, the fact that the crowds are still looking so low. It was up last night, but obviously a big part of that will be the fact that Portsmouth bought quite a few.
Yeah.
Even with the ticket price initiative that's changed, I mean, there's still the increase on the day, which a lot of fans are unhappy about. But even with that, I do think like there is still that general malaise around the club based on some of the off-field discussions. A lot of people, if you read the message board, still aren't happy with the direction things are going with. There's been a lot of stuff, again, leaked this week that suggests that unhappiness behind the scenes in, you know, on the non-football side of the club, which does feed through, I think, to the fan base as well and causes a lot of upset. There are still big problems at the club. Just because they've won the last two games, it doesn't mean everything's suddenly hunky-dory, but it will help if they can put a run together. But then it always comes back to the ownership and the way the club's run if that small squad starts to take a hold again in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I would have thought if the team keeps winning and getting good results and playing well, then the byproduct of that normally is that people that have, or some of the people that have stayed away will start to come back. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, the MK Dons game next week is a Tuesday night. Again, I wouldn't have thought the attendance would be particularly high, but if you get a good result at Shrewsbury and then you go into the MK game, obviously you've got the Ipswich on the Saturday. I mean, Ipswich will bring big support, so that should be, you would think, an indicator of whether people will begin to come back and see, you know, and boost the numbers again. But as you say, people have got their own reasons for not being there, completely understand that, and it definitely needs more work. It's just the fact that at least the last couple of results and some of the performances of late have given a bit more encouragement after what had been a pretty sort of tough start to the season, really, hadn't it, on the pitch and off it with other things.
Yeah, we should mention the FA Cup draw. So Charlton drawn at home to non-league opponents, Colville, from the Southern Premier Central Division. I know there was a massive sigh coming out of your mouth when it was a home draw. It should be a good one. I really enjoyed Charlton's FA Cup run last year. The home game against Havant.
Have you muted yourself? Come on, you were giving me jip about the technology.
Dodgy Wi-Fi. I don't live a million miles away from Sparrows Lane, so maybe there's a chance that they've extended their extension cord into my house and somehow knocked out my Wi-Fi.
Do you know what there, Lou? For a second, I was in control and it scared me.
Yeah,
I didn't know what was going on.
It should have scared. Well, so we worked out you can't even work out how to turn the Twitter space on. So
I'm just all of a sudden it was like I was hosting and like the pressure was just so intolerable to me. I began to panic and I was thinking, what am I going to do? Should I sing or should I do something different? But anyway,
did you hear me talk about a cup draw then? I said I'm looking forward to Colville at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that, and you mentioned again about the fact that I'd like it was a home draw. So what can you tell me? What's the early info you can tell me about them? I think they've got a Luke Shaw playing for them, but it's obviously not the Manchester United one.
Well, it could be. It could be on loan. So I can tell you they're based in Leicestershire. I can tell you actually one of my wife's friends who lives down here and is partnered up with a Charlton fan. She's from Colville. So
okay.
That's exciting. They beat Notts County in the fourth qualifying round. Judging by the video from their bar when the draw came out, they're very pleased to be coming down to Charlton. They look a lot happier than a lot of Charlton fans do, actually, to have to come down to the Valley.
Would you have liked to have gone to Colville?
Absolutely, absolutely. The away games like that, I've never been to Colville, so it would have been a tick-off. But away games like that, exactly the sort of thing that the FA Cup is all about. As long as you don't lose, at which point it becomes like a humiliation, like the Northwich Victoria game back in the day.
I mean, you're still at the moment in four competitions. You can win League One, the EFL Trophy, the EFL Cup, and the FA Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, no one's betting against us doing the quadruple at this early stage of the season. It's whether we've got the squad to go deep into the later rounds of the FA Cup, especially by the end of the season. You know, we'll be walking wounded. I know some of the Premier League giants haven't looked quite as good this season, like Fulham. But I'd like us to get to the third round. I really enjoyed that last season. I'd like us to make a go of the Papa John's. I don't really care about until there's a chance we might go to Wembley. Then I'll change my tune maybe. But yeah, the FA Cup is a good chance to see how far we can get in that, and at least have some sort of meaning to the season if my playoff stats have put everyone off.
Well, hopefully they haven't. I mean, I was really impressed. How long did that take you to pull the stats together on the playoffs?
Oh, not long. I'm very good at Excel, Rich. I don't like to blow my own Excel trumpet too often, but so I've already got. I had the model set up from when I worked out about 3 games ago. So I just literally had to change the amount of games left, and update the amount of points we had, and then it all flowed through. Again, I feel like I'm not. I imagine this all sounds like Greek to you, because, like I say, you can barely turn on Twitter. But yeah, it's very clever.
I think a lot of people listening will think you're incredibly arrogant, and I'm the humble one.
They'd be absolutely. Very
boring. But I don't. I bow down to your knowledge, mate. And as I've said, I was impressed with the graph as well that you put on Twitter as well. That was again something beyond my skills.
Yeah, it gives you an idea of rough. So as it stands, Charlton's points per game, I think they're going to finish on about 62 points. I've got the graph in front of me here. Yeah, 62.4. So as it stands, but obviously all can change. And I'll just briefly look ahead. We've got one more question. But before that, should we just look ahead to the game with Shrewsbury? I was actually a bit surprised to see they're above Charlton in the table. I just assumed they were about 19th like they normally are. But they've had a decent start to the season.
Well, if you'd done your research, you would know that they've had some good results.
I don't look that far ahead. I normally do my research on a Thursday. So there we go.
When I say that, do your research, I've just quickly clicked on Soccerbase to look at their results.
They're playing Stockport.
And I can see that they've won.
Yeah, they're playing Stockport tonight in the EFL Trophy.
I remember going there the last time I went there, because we're going to talk again about the fact that I have an aversion to travelling, which is obviously complete rubbish. It's to do with how many clubs we cover. But the last time I went there was when you played them in the playoffs, wasn't it? When Lee Bowyer was manager.
Yeah,
I can still remember
got hit by one of their
Lee
fans.
Being very deflated in a sort of room underneath the stands after that game. And obviously, next season had a much happier ending.
Yeah, well, I remember that game well. So I think Lee Bowyer had wound their fans up with some of his comments in the build-up. I think I can't remember if he said sort of on paper Charlton are a better side. So despite the fact they just got to Wembley, a lot of their fans who spilled onto the pitch were directing a lot of their ire at Bow. Then I remember some of them directed it at us on the way out. I was walking around the back to go and interview Bowyer with Ollie Groom. Former club media officer, who was wearing a Charlton tracksuit. And this Shrewsbury fan got so full of himself and so excited that he saw someone with the Charlton badge on, and he wanted to come and rub it in our faces. So he came up and he's like, wow, we'll see you next season. At which point me and Ollie both said, well, if you see us next season, that means you're going to lose the playoff fight, isn't it? Which they did. And we did see them next season, and we beat them 3-0. No away wins this season. I feel like they are close. They could have won a couple of their away games this season. So I don't get too concerned about that, but it is a weird point that they're so good at home and still unable to pick up that 3 points away.
Well, yeah, it's like, I think I've mentioned something for the paper at the week. Let me just see if I can find it quickly. So I think I'm right in saying, if this isn't right, then I can quickly change it and not make a mistake in the paper. But 15 of 19 points have come at the Valley, 16 goals at home, I think 6 away. I mean, if that isn't quite right, I'll have to check it, because it'll be proof before it goes in. But it's quite a contrast, isn't it? And it's just, I just think sometimes there's no real reason for these things. You just need they just need to get that first win, and then I think it opens it up. You've seen far more of the away matches. I've seen some of them. But like, I haven't seen them all, so it makes it harder to really kind of give an exact verdict on why it hasn't quite happened. But I mean, the good thing is the home form's been good, because I mean, that has given some kind of encouragement now that things can. It's not going to take, if you win your home games and pick up at least a point away from home. Obviously, four points averaging out for home and away games, you're going to be right in the mix.
Yeah, 15 points at the Valley, 4 points on the road, so not far off. Again, I can teach you how to use a league table if you'd like before the end of the week.
Yeah, 15. Sorry, hang on a minute. What did you say?
15 at home, 4 away. You said 16.
No, they've scored 16 times in the league at home. 15 of your 19 points have come at the Valley. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all right. So
right, that is right. I'm literally reading what's on my on my document that I'm doing for the paper. So, I mean, if I've made a mistake, I perfectly accept it, because I make plenty, but I'm not taking cheap shots from you tonight as well.
Well, you've had enough of those. This is probably why you stay away from any game I go to these days. Right, so we'll wrap it up soon, because we've been going on for a bit. We've got one more question. This is from my brother, actually, and he wants to know, Richard Corley, what's your perfect Sunday?
What's my perfect Sunday? Yeah. That's a difficult question, but I like...
Corley House on a Sunday afternoon. Obviously, now Fulham are in the Prem, I guess you have to watch a few of their games on a Sunday.
But... Yeah, I've recently got into my FPL quite a lot this year, and I wouldn't have thought my wife's particularly pleased by it, but if there's a decent game on, I'm much more inclined to watch it and see how badly I do. But a little bit of gym, and normally nice roast dinner and a couple of glasses of red wine, that'll do me in the evening. But
similar to every other night then, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, mate. Yeah, no. What's your Sunday? What's I mean, obviously your brother will know this, but no one else that's listening will know. What's a standard kind of Mendes Sunday?
Well, obviously I have to host the award nominated Charlton Live podcast on a Sunday for just got off fourth nomination for the Football Supporters Association Award. So I do that on a Sunday. Do that on a Sunday morning now. We used to do it on Sunday evenings, but I do that on a Sunday morning. And then I spend the rest of the day with my wife and my daughter. So we go out somewhere nice, like to a park or something. Yeah, and then maybe
an owl sanctuary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know a cracking owl sanctuary. And if we have a chance, maybe watch the Sunday afternoon Premier League games as well. But yeah, well, what a lovely wholesome way to wrap.
What a dull way to wrap it up. But yeah, you're right. I like some of these more left field questions away from the football. But I don't know if they're going to be any more interesting.
Yeah, I think outside of football, people really want to get to know the real Richard Corley. But once they do, they'll probably regret it. Right, I think we should leave it there. We've gone over time. So this has been our second SLP verdict. So thanks for everyone who's tuned in. We'll put it on our website. If you've only just caught the end of it, we'll put it up on the website later on this evening so you can listen back. To our thoughts on the 3-0 win for Charlton over Portsmouth last night. I think, Richard, you're planning on doing a Palace one tomorrow, so I imagine the majority of the people on this call will have very little.
Well, the funny thing they might want to do is just tune in to see, because I think I'm trying to set it up, so it will be with Adam Sells and Edmund Brack. And it's probably got every possibility of imploding, because I don't really know what I'm doing.
Despite the rumours, I'm not going to be involved in that tomorrow, happily.
You're on the grafts. You're on the grafts.
Yeah, I could do some grafts. I have to say, actually, I haven't kept the closest eye on the Premier League this season, because I've been more interested, obviously, in League One. But I was on Radio London last night before we spoke about Charlton. Someone was asking if Patrick Vieira might be under a bit of pressure. So I was like, here we go. Palace struggling. So actually, I might start looking at this league table if they are. So I can at least enjoy that.
Tune in tomorrow, see what we all think.
Yeah, excellent. Right, Richard Corley, SLP Sports Editor, thanks for speaking to me this evening.
Yeah, and thanks everyone that contributed, and hopefully it wasn't too dull. It was worthwhile. Yeah. Second one, will there be a third? We'll see.
Yeah, I think next one I've earmarked a potential one where you might bother to go to the game. I think is after Charlton play Ipswich at home at the end of October. So if Richard can get out of bed for that one, maybe we'll do another SLP version.
Just checking, has your title changed to sports editor or not? Because now you're telling me where I'm going, are you?
There's every chance. That game's in London, you might turn up.
No, there is every chance, Lou, that I will be there marvelling at another fine display.
Well, I look forward to it. Yeah. Right, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
We'll speak to you guys again in a couple of weeks' time.